Have you ever thought how many really strange things you do? Have you ever thought, if I were to ask you, I'm not going to because it could prove quite embarrassing. But have you ever thought, you know, if you just cast your mind back over the last few weeks, how many really peculiar things you do? I mean, last week, most of you over 18, you went to some village hall, school. If you lived in Cornwall, you'd have gone to a castle. There was one village where you could even go to a caravan, and they would give you a piece of paper with some names on and some squares on the right hand side, and they'd invite you to put a cross on it. They'd invite you to fold the piece of paper over, put it in a box through a slot, and tell you that it was going to make a dramatic difference to the United Kingdom. And we will pray for that later. Or some of you perhaps enjoy the idea, along with thousands and thousands of people who queue up for hours sometimes, spend a lot of money, and go to a big stadium where there are rows and rows of, well, I was going to say seats, but lots of people stand and leap, make lots of noise, sing Abide With Me on certain occasions, watch 22 people run around for best part of 2.5 hours, kicking a round piece of leather, and the people who sit there get so excited when it moves to one end. And I'm thinking to myself, well, isn't it strange? Or you watch a game of snooker and you think to yourself, what on earth is that misrule? I don't understand it. Why does the poor guy have to put it back? He's done his best, for goodness sake, but it's declared a miss and somebody's got a penalty. And there's a whole host of other strange things that you do. Now, some of you have come in here this morning and thought, well, this is a group of strange people. I tell you what, though, I bet if you look at your own life and you invited us to some of the things you do, we might think you were strange as well. It's just possible, isn't it? And this morning you're thinking to yourself, well, they are a strange lot. They sing a lot of songs, they get excited, they clap, they shut their eyes, they speak to someone we can't see, and then what on earth is this blue thing full of relatively warm water? It's warm enough, it's warm enough. I haven't been in completely, but I assure you it's warm enough because it's been being heated since 11 o'clock last night. And you're thinking to yourselves, well, what on earth is all this about? Well, in all honesty, it is a bit strange, isn't it? I mean, the word we use even is a bit strange. The word baptize is not a common word. Do you know why? It's because it's not an English word. Actually, it's a word that when the Bible was translated, it got left around because they weren't quite certain how to translate it. And although I'm not going to go there this morning, it could have caused trouble if they had translated it. But I was looking, the last few weeks we've been talking Old Testament stories, those of us have been here in Ashwood, about Moses. And we weren't intending to speak about Moses yet again, because there were 3 planned weeks, and then we had a visitor from the United States, and he talked about Moses last week. And I actually discovered this strange phrase in the New Testament in one of Paul's letters to a place called Corinth. And this is what he wrote. He said, I don't want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our forefathers, and he's looking back to their ancestors, were all under the cloud, and that they all passed through the sea, and they were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And it's a really strange phrase. Baptized into Moses. Now, Moses, remember, was the man who led the whole Israelite nation who'd been slaves in Egypt. He led them all out of Egypt. He led them actually through the Red Sea. It parted. And they walked through the sea. And there's certainly an image of water there. If you can imagine the concept of walls of sea either side of as you walk through on dry land. Must have been quite a scary prospect. Somewhat more significant than this relatively small amount of water here. But you see, this phrase, baptized into Moses, the reason I read it, it gives you a bit of a clue. If you go into the New Testament, you also find a similar phrase where it says about those of us who've been baptized, it says, It describes our baptism as being baptized into Jesus Christ. In fact, it says we were baptized into his death. And so we need to just take a quick look, because the imagery of this is so helpful. You see, the word actually comes from the industry where material is made and fashioned into clothing. It's a dyeing term, D-Y-E-ing term. It's to do with changing the colour of material, and the word actually means completely immersed in something. When you dye a material, you put the whole thing right inside the water, or the colour, I suppose you'd have to say, and the material absorbs the colour, and it's almost inside both ways, because you've got the colour inside the material, but you've got the material inside the colour. And baptism is a bit like that. And that's why it's such a powerful image, because we are talking about people being baptised and going right into this water, but actually at the same time, the water of baptism, God himself, is going into them. A number of images. Although there are a few bits and pieces that came out of the hose pipe in there, that is very clean water, really. And so we are talking about something that causes people to be clean. What a powerful image. Excuse me. One or two people have referred to that this morning. Simon talked about wanting to be completely clean. Not just having a bath, but completely clean inside and out. What a powerful image. Talking about the image of being baptized into Jesus' death, there's another image that's written off here where it actually reminds us that Jesus, having died on the cross, was buried in a tomb, but then he rose again. So you have a similar image of someone going into that, reminding us of the death of Jesus Christ, coming out of it into something new. That reference that I began with, baptized into Moses, it's saying that by being baptized into Jesus Christ, it's almost like being inextricably linked with God himself. There's something of God sort of mixed with me. There's something of God within me, not just because I've gone in water, but because of the decisions I've made, because I've chosen to exercise my faith that believe in God, as you've heard people say, and believe that he's going to make a difference to my life. And actually, there was one more image, the other image that I mentioned the Moses story about, because the Moses story recognizes that they went from slavery into a land of promises. And this image is similar to slavery, because actually, most of us, we don't deliberately set out to do wrong things, most of us, but somehow it happens. Somehow, it's interesting, I heard Simon saying that he prayed that God would make him a good boy. I'd like you to know I was a good boy. You see, I was brought up in one of those families where, well, it was hard not to be good. You know, the way life was in our household. You know, I went to church at least four times every Sunday, and it was difficult. And I used to think, so I'm all right. And then I started to look at the little things about myself. God drew attention to the fact that I wasn't always quite as honest as I could be. I didn't tell lots of big lies. They were just little deceptions. Because I didn't want people to know that I'd made mistakes, for instance. But I realised that even though I wanted it all to be right, it wasn't. Because there are mistakes that we make. We don't deliberately set out to hurt people. We don't deliberately set out to be critical. But sometimes those words have slipped out and we can't get them back. You see, sin is not just murdering people and the big issues. Sin is anything less than what God wants us to be. And we all fall into that category. And it's like slavery. It's like you haven't got a choice. You can't get away. But actually, what God says is, it is possible to actually break the hold of that slavery and to get away from it and actually to enter. They called it the promised land. I'm talking about a land of promises. Because actually, now, anybody who tells you that becoming a Christian means all is going to be wonderful from there on is telling lies. Because it isn't like that. Jesus himself said, in this world there will be trouble. Because it's not automatically easy to live life the right way. It's not automatically easy to hear what God's saying and do it his way. But Jesus also said, but fear not, because I've overcome the world. So although it's not all easy, it is a land of promises. You've heard different people, Janet in particular, declare promises over the people who are going to be baptized this morning. There are promises written in that box. We hear God say things. Actually, Simon's first response, the very first week he came in here, I just said something to him that I felt God was saying. And he came back to me and he said, how did you know all that? Well, I didn't think I knew anything. Sometimes it's just the things that God says declares a promise over our lives. So let me just read to you the passage that that comes from, because it's a bigger picture. This is out of 1 Corinthians. I begin at the end of chapter 9, and it starts like this. This, by the way, was a letter to people who would have understood not exactly the football imagery that I started with, but going to the stadium anyway and watching the athletes. It says this, you've all been to the stadium and seen the athletes race. Everyone runs, one wins. And then he says, run to win. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a gold medal that tarnishes and fades. You're after one that's gold eternally. I don't know about you, he says, but I'm running hard for the finish line. I'm giving it everything I've got. No sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert and in top condition. I'm not going to get caught napping, telling everyone else all about it and then missing out myself. Because you see, it is really important to say that this doesn't just, I believe eternally it changes us, but we have to choose how to live every day. We still have decisions to make. We still have choices to make. But he went on and said, remember our history, friends, and be warned. All our ancestors were led by the providential cloud and taken miraculously through the sea. They went through the waters in a baptism like ours, he says, as Moses led them from enslaving death to salvation life. They all ate and drank identical food and drink, meals provided daily by God. They drank from the rock, God's fountain for them that stayed with them wherever they were. And that rock was Christ. I haven't got time to explain all that. I'm just reading that bit because it's a little bit complicated, but it draws attention to the fact that Jesus Christ is the solid element of all of this at the center of this story. And he says, just experiencing God's wonder and grace didn't seem to mean much. Most of them were defeated by temptation during the hard times in the desert, and God was not pleased. And then he says but this same thing could happen to us. We must be on our guard so that we never get caught up wanting our own way as they did. Sounds strange, doesn't it? But you know, wanting your own way is not automatically the best way forward. Because we don't always see the big picture. So what are the lessons to learn for us this morning? We've got a few people here going to be baptized. We've got these powerful images before us. We've got those warnings from Paul. Well, first of all, let me say one or two things. Firstly, Paul says he's actually speaking of discipline and training, keeping ourselves in shape. The Corinthians to whom he was writing were very familiar with the athletics of which he speaks and the way runners prepare themselves very thoroughly to be the best. He's speaking to an enthusiastic church. As I read the book of Corinthians, the letter to them, which was a corrective letter, I think they would make actual church pale into insignificance. I think they were madness. I think they were riotous. I think they were so excited about what they were doing, and they pushed it beyond sometimes. So he's speaking to enthusiastic people, but he's saying to them, you see, the athletes go to all this trouble just to win a gold medal. We're talking about something that is eternal. It won't tarnish because it's not made of gold. It's life to the full forever. And then he says, no sloppy living for me. I'm staying alert and in top condition. I want to say to the folk who have been baptized, I want to say to every person in this room who's already been baptized, this doesn't mean you can sit back and relax and all will be well. It means I've made a step, but actually there are a whole lot more steps, a whole lot more choices, because we want to make a difference in our world and we want to live life God's way. And then he reminds them of the history we've in the church here have been looking at for the last few weeks. And the Israelites had gone through this sort of baptism. They'd gone through this water. They'd come out of slavery in Egypt. They're walking through the sea. They're being enveloped in a cloud of God's presence. They've got everything, even their meals provided by God. They see water gushing from the rocks when they haven't got anything to drink. And yet, Paul says, but experiencing God's wonder and grace didn't seem to mean much, because most of them were defeated by temptation during the hard times in the desert, and God wasn't pleased. The truth is, if you read that story, you'll see they seemed to forget God was around, and they certainly didn't live as though he really mattered to them. And then finally, for each one of us, there's this warning. The same thing could happen to us. We must be on guard so that we never get caught up in wanting our own way as they did. The truth is, there is a choice. There's a choice for every single one of you. I am pretty confident that for most of you, listening to what these folk have said is probably more important than listening to what I've said. But I want to say to any of you who this morning are just wondering, what is it that made Lee keep wanting to come? Why is it that Simon, after such a short period of time, has seen sight of something and he's saying, actually, I need to follow Jesus. I need to be baptized. Why is it that we've heard stories from Martin there talking about a time when he saw himself and his family having lost their way a little, coming back, and so excited about it? These aren't theoretical. I'm not just reading out of a book. I'm talking about lives that have been changed and transformed. And I want to say to any of you who've caught sight of something and thinking, well, actually, I just wonder if there's something in that for me. Then before you go from here, why not talk to somebody? You could come and talk to me and I'll find somebody more interesting than me for you to talk to. And then you could discover something more. Or you could talk to some of these folk who've said what they've said. Some of you have come with them anyway, which is absolutely great. You are so welcome with us this morning. These warnings apply to every one of us. Whether you've been a Christian for 5 minutes, whether you feel as though you've been a Christian for 60 years, like me, whether you are only just on the track, whether you're actually a church leader, it applies to every single one of us. None of us is exempt. There's no sort of superiority scale. Every single one of us needs to take this warning seriously. We must be on our guard. We would be wise, every single one of us, to invite Jesus Christ to be the Lord of our life, which is another one of those grand statements which some people will say, what on earth does he mean? Well, I'll just point you back to the misrule and you tell me what that means. Because actually, I am confident this morning, even though I can't explain it as well as I'd like, I am confident that there's a God who has not only created this world, but is still interested in every element of it. But he's not just a distant God. God knows how many hairs there are on my head. God knows everything there is to know about me. He knows what I'm going to do tomorrow. He knows the mistakes I'm going to make, and he is not fazed by it. But I also know that I really matter to him, and he wants the very best for me. And if you're in the category of us this morning and you're saying, well, I don't feel like that. I feel there's something missing. I feel there's something more I want to discover. Then please, do at least have a chat with somebody before you go. You might just have a whole load more questions. Incidentally, we've got a lot too. But we also have some answers. So we're going in a minute, after singing one song, we're going to dip 6 people into this water. And it is an exciting day. Thank you very much. Do remember, next time you're doing something really strange and peculiar, just remind yourself that perhaps this isn't quite as strange as at first we might think.